Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
Good day to you all. It's Oliver on the air till 10 on this merry Monday morning in October. How are tricks with you? We're 13 days into the month now. Things have calmed down a good deal compared to how last week ended in here, I can tell you. But we're at your service in the usual way on the WhatsApp. That's 087 032 32 32. And for your longer letters, you can always email oliver@rte.ie. And welcome Taris Jock on the show today. Siobhan Cullen, she's the star of the comedy drama Obituary. If you've seen it, you'll know it's very dark comedy. There's blood and guts and all that sort of thing. It's a young woman in a country town becoming a killer, basically, to earn a couple of bob. And basically, it's if Dexter worked for the Mayo News. And a new series will start tomorrow night on RTE. Siobhan is in that gang of Irish talent actors, you know, are hanging about London these days. Do they hang out together, I wonder? Sure, we'll find out. We'll ask her anyway later on. And we're also going to be looking at a new exhibition that tells the stories of Irish people who joined the resistance in various countries around Europe when they were invaded by the Nazis in World War II. And we may not have heard of quite a lot of them, but they did amazing things, including rescuing children from the gas chambers. And various members of resistance units in Belgium and in France includes Samuel Beckett's stint in the French resistance, where he was on the run from the Gestapo in kind of a lesser spotted period in his biographies and his life. We'll tell you everything later on. 51551 is the text. Now, all morning we've been watching pictures from the Middle East, and it is scarcely believable that big peace plan has unfolded there incredibly quickly. I mean, this time last week we thought there was no end. There were just a couple of days of talks, but we've had a weekend of hope there, the first in a very long time. Israeli forces, they have pulled out of vast parts of Gaza. They are still in situ in about half of the Gaza Strip, and there was a withdrawal line to be agreed. There's a lot of stuff to be done and details we work through, which is amazing to see. So much merry pictures of hope and positivity coming from that region. You would have seen footage of thousands of Palestinians making their way in huge convoys on foot to the north of Gaza to see what's left of their homes there and the communities after the months of the most recent bombing in the incursion by Israeli forces. And of course, to mourn their many, many dead, over 60,000 Palestinians. Hostages on the other side are being released. These are 20 Israeli men held for 2 years. The last thing they might have seen above ground more than 2 years ago were those savage attacks by Hamas on a festival and the villages. And they were brought for leverage, basically, into those tunnels around Gaza, where they've been in various stages of starvation and terror ever since. And they're being reunited with families today, seven, as you heard in the news, already released. And across the day, they're being brought by Red Cross convoy by arrangement across the border from Gaza back into Israel. And really everything here is happening at the same time. Hamas announced it's going to have no future role in governing Gaza, which is quite extraordinary, I think you'd have to agree. The groups, they've been running Gaza since 2007. And I mean, life before the war was pretty terrible, particularly for women. In Gaza under the Hamas regime, where domestic violence was effectively legal in the family home. They were not allowed to watch football, never mind take part in it and so on. However, Hamas not governing doesn't mean they don't want control, and they've been using their guns because they've been fighting over the weekend, and not against Israeli forces this time, but against other Palestinian factions, a gang called the Dugmush clan, and 27 people on either side have been shot dead in just the last 2 days. I was reading the BBC that residents describe scenes of panic, dozens of families fleeing their homes under heavy gunfire. They'd already been displaced multiple times during the war. They come back hoping for peace. This time people aren't fleeing Israeli attacks. They are running from their own people, was a quote there in one of the reports. Meanwhile, Tony Blair's name is all over this again. The Guardian reporting this morning that he has won the endorsement of the Palestinian Authority. They are more or less in control in the West Bank along the border with Jordan. And they've now approved, apparently, Tony Blair's involvement in the reconstruction of Gaza after a meeting in Jordan between Tony Blair and the Palestinian Authority. And this is related to the Board of Peace that Donald Trump has been proposing, and the precise powers of what that Board of Peace and the people appointed on the Palestinian side has yet to be clarified, because we know in Palestinian circles they've been talking about then any foreign involvement in basically an international ruling committee over Palestine people wouldn't be acceptable to them. So there's a lot to be worked out. But Donald Trump, he was on Air Force One overnight. He was even questioning whether Tony Blair would be popular enough with other leaders involved in that Board of Peace that he envisages to oversee the governors of Gaza. He's saying, "I've always liked Tony, but I want to find out that he's an acceptable choice to everybody," which is not exactly a massive endorsement. He has been endorsed by the Palestinian Authority, but on the Israeli side, Netanyahu and even the Trump administration, they've not yet said they're willing to work with that that authority, which is run by Mahmoud Abbas. He was barred from flying to the UN, you'll remember, in the recent summit in New York, although he is going to the big summit in Egypt later on today. That this region is where Trump is headed. He landed in Tel Aviv. I see him signing a book at the moment with his Sharpie. He's inside the Israeli parliament right now because he arrived about 8:30. And meeting him on the tarmac, it was very interesting to see Jared Kushner, his son-in-law, who apparently has been working behind the scenes in the talks that were happening in Egypt. Ivanka Trump is next to him. And this is like back to the first Trump administration where you saw them nearly every day. But they announced they were not going to get involved in the second Trump administration, at least in an official capacity. But they're there now in the sunlight this morning to soak up this early stages of what looks like a big, big success for Donald Trump. He looks very pleased with himself. He's standing next to Netanyahu and he's just signed some documents there inside the Israeli parliament. He's going to address the Knesset very shortly, and he's going to essentially try to ensure that that it's all over. He was chatting to journalists overnight, and I don't think you've probably never heard this happy, clappiest version of Donald Trump speaking and hoping that every word he says is coming true. Let's have a listen to what he's saying on Air Force One.
"The one thing I can tell you is everybody is happy, whether it's Jewish or Muslim or the Arab countries. Every country is dancing in the streets, and it's a point in time. I don't think you'd ever see it again. They've never seen it for 3,000 years. If you like one group, you don't like the other group. And if you like the other group, you don't like the first group. And this is the first time they've ever seen where everybody is unified."
Okay, everyone's unified, according to him. He's delighted with everything. And he says he's very, very confident of peace.
Benjamin Netanyahu, the Prime Minister, has not gone so far as to say the war is over. In your view, is the war between Israel and Hamas over?
War is over. The war is over. Okay, do you understand that?
The war is over, he says, and that's what he's going to be telling the Knesset in the next hour. And Netanyahu's allies in power, they're still opposed to peace and they're still calling for total military victory and control of Gaza. So he's there to tell them to simmer down, and he's going to effectively warn Netanyahu not to start the war again, even if they want to. And because Netanyahu wants to cling to power. Trump has also said he would be proud to visit Gaza. That would be a long way off, I would imagine. But he sounds very, very happy clappy indeed. And he was in such good form to absolutely every journalist on the plane, almost.
"Are you considering walking that path?"
"Who are you with?"
"Politico, Dasha Burns, sir."
"Dasha, Politico. Politico's gone bad. They've been so wrong about everything. Politico, Politico has been so wrong about everything. Let's get somebody else to ask some questions. Do you mind? Is that all right?" Politico's fake news.
Couldn't help himself. He couldn't help himself. But this is a good day for Donald Trump. This peace deal, if it works, we are hoping he has pulled the whole thing off. As ever in the Middle East, things fall apart very quickly. But hopefully, this success will stick. Trump will finish in Israel. He'll go off to Egypt then. He's going to co-host a summit with the Egyptian president there of more than 20 world leaders. That's happening in Sharm el-Sheikh. This is al-Sisi. Do you remember the Egyptian president that Trump described as my favourite dictator the last time out and embarrassed everybody there? Who's going? 20 world leaders. Emmanuel Macron from France. He'll be glad to get out of France, where he's on the brink of resignation with the political pressure there. Keir Starmer will also be happy to get out of Britain as well, because he's in trouble there. Any chance to get away for a while. And he's very good on the international stage, Keir Starmer, but unpopular at home, to put it mildly. The Turkish leader is going to be there, the Palestinian Authority president, the Italian Prime Minister Meloni, the UN Secretary General, the European Council president, and it's all happening in Sharm el-Sheikh later on this morning, basically. Patrick and Louth is on the text already. Said, go on, you can say it. Well done, President Trump. Are you a Trump fan? Well, we've said it. Yeah, we've said it. Absolutely hoping that he's right about it. And Trump's assertion is the greatest peace deal since the dawn of civilization. It's a ceasefire. It's commendable and you played a major role. But the cause of the conflict, a home for the Palestinian people, is still blatantly unresolved, says John on that text as well. OK, the Middle East. More to come on the various programmes coming up all day today. Now, sport. What a weekend in sport it was. It was a weekend of shocks in the GAA. The giants in GAA of championships past have bit the dust. This year's All-Ireland finalists, Errigal Kieran, they were beaten in the Tyrone semi-finals. And then you have All-Ireland champions Glenn falling to Mara Felt. Sloch Neil bowed out to reigning champions Newbridge and Derry. The All-Ireland champions Cooley, they were beaten the weekend before. This is in football. Kilmacud Crokes are gone as well. Some of the big clubs across the country will be facing their chance. You know, the bigger clubs are gone, so the kind of clubs that are nearly was will be fancying their chances in province and county as the championship goes on into the winter. And Galway's Cara Finn, Tuam Stars are gone. Cross with Glen beaten in the Armagh semi-final by Cully Hanna. It's amazing stuff. These are the new rules in action, and they've been very exciting results as well. But did you think, watching the soccer on Saturday night, that we were having a draw with Portugal and our hopes were clinging to hopes and all that? Why does Ireland always play so well against teams we're fairly certain we're going to be hammered by? Losing humiliation to Armenia, and then you have very familiar heroic last minute defeat to the Portuguese with a saved penalty and everything. It was a reminder of 3 years ago, wasn't it, when we put up that display against Portugal in a very low moment for Irish football. But the Portuguese media are portraying it as, look, it was a 10-0-0 formation by Ireland with one shot on target compared to Portugal's 30 and so on. And as usual, our World Cup qualifying campaign is in bits, but it's not, the defeat isn't even clear. So there's still a shred of a thread of a hope to qualify for the playoffs. Something to do with absolutely beating Armenia tomorrow night. And then if Birnam Wood moves to Dunsinane, plus a man from Carlow points a tractor facing Longford under a full moon, and Hungary somehow slips into the sea if it shoulders past Croatia, then the confluence of permutations mean we could reach the playoff round. I think I've got that right. Meanwhile, the other team on the island, which we ignore all the time because they're called Northern Ireland and they bring Union Jacks to their matches, they're playing Germany tonight. Is it tonight or tomorrow night? Anyway, they're equal on points in their Group A for the World Cup qualifiers with Germany. And they've beaten Luxembourg and they've beaten Slovakia. Northern Ireland are in the 70s in the FIFA World Rankings. Slovakia would be in the 40s. A decent enough team. They beat them 2-0. And they're amazing goals where they lob them. They make them look like Armenia on a normal day. So they're having an incredible run. Now, Deutschland is a big ask for them because they lost 3-1 there early in September. But they're in a very good spot, much better than against Ireland in a harder group. And it's down to the manager, Michael O'Neill, and the solid presence they've had. They have no FAI various shenanigans, do they, over the years. Michael O'Neill's been the manager of the Northern team since 2011. There was a break of 2 years when he went off elsewhere, but he's done an incredible job. And he's done a lot in the squad as well to kind of diversify them. Players coming in from Derry City, which of course plays in the League of Ireland the South, and a lot of players from nationalist backgrounds. He's done an unbelievable job there. Now he has. If you're watching Wales-Ireland, you'll know this, but if you haven't, you know usually their child mascots come out with the team and they hold their hands and stand beside the anthem. They did something entirely different at the England game that people are talking about over the weekend. They walked out with mascots suffering from dementia at Wembley, England-Wales. It was an international friendly and it was a partnership between the Alzheimer's Society and the Football Association over there. And it was a really lovely thing. The players standing aside these 22 people who were nominated to walk out with the stars, and just extraordinary dignity, and they sang the national anthem. It was a lovely moment, and this was an idea the Alzheimer's Society has been working on for a long time. They set up the partnership in 2021. Would we do the same here? There are various groups looking after people with dementia and older people and so on, will they consider that for one of our international games? Because you need a bit of light and shade, don't you? Some good things happening in the world around. It was a very, very nice moment. Now, another nice thing is our friends in on Fod Dov. Remember the Blacksod Lighthouse over in the Erris Peninsula in County Mayo? They're in the news today because they're calling it the lighthouse that saved D-Day, now driving tourism in Mayo. And there's a picture of our friend Fergus Sweeney, who's the grandson of Maureen Flavin Sweeney. She had the weather report from Blacksod Lighthouse that basically delayed the D-Day invasion, changed the course of history from 1944. Lighthouse tourism is a big revenue generator in the Irish Times business section today. 350,000 visits, 33 million in direct revenue per year. Ireland has some of the most glorious lighthouses in the country, and you do well to do a visit down to Blacksod, lovely remote part of the world. And Fergus is saying that it's just changed the whole. It's massive for the local area. It's created jobs that did not exist even 3-4 years ago. 25 jobs directly created by the lighthouse. The tourist numbers are also lifting the local hotels and businesses, which would be around Belmullet and places like that. They feed off them. They feed us off us. And they have the lovely Sullis Visitor Centre, which I've been to down the road in Achleen beside on Fod Dov. It is gorgeous, and it's a lovely warm hug. And I was watching The Late Late the other night, and I saw Damian Lewis talking about the fact that one of his upcoming movies is opposite Andrew Scott, and it's all about that weather report that came from Blacksod and was so instrumental on the D-Day and delaying it by a day because they could spot the storm coming in. And this is the largest seaborne invasion in history, and Maureen Flavin Sweeney sent that report, and they checked, rechecked it. It was the call they made that absolutely shaped history. Her husband, Ted Sweeney, made the call, and Group Captain James Stagg forecast when he got it into his hands, he had to chat to Eisenhower to delay the operation. And would you believe Andrew Scott, the Irishman, he's going to play he's going to play Britain's chief meteorological officer, the very same James Stagg who had to go to Dwight Eisenhower, the Supreme Allied Commander, with the weather conditions, and make that decision in very, very tense hours, which will no doubt make a good fun movie. The fate of World War II in the course of history determined from Blacksod into the hands of this man. Who else? Damien Lewis is in the film, Brendan Fraser and Kerry Condon, another Irish person in there as well. And what's nice about it is that Damien Lewis and Andrew Scott were both in Band of Brothers, which was all about the D-Day, what started with the D-Day landings and went on into World War II, well worth a rewatch and so on. So lovely story there for the people of Blacksod. Right, we better get on with business because we've loads to do this morning. Sigrid has announced Dublin gigs next March. This is the Norwegian pop singer. She's going to go to the Olympia Theatre in Dublin on the spring equinox, 21st of March. Tickets are on sale this Friday.